serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
You've likely heard those words a time or two. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressing Congress on December 8, 1941. But how often have you heard the rest of that speech? 100-year-old Pearl Harbor survivor Mickey Gannich of San Leandro, California, could tell you quite a bit about it. We're going to jump back into his story in a moment, but right now let's hear some excerpts of how the president made the case for Congress declaring war in the wake of those December 7th attacks 78 years ago.
United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation and, at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. It will be recorded that the distance of Hawaii from Japan makes it obvious that the attack was deliberately planned many days or even weeks ago. The Japanese government has deliberately sought to deceive the United States. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense, but always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. I believe that I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God.
FDR on December 8, 1941, a date that found 22-year-old Mickey Gannich still at Pearl Harbor. That football game with the Arizona would never happen. 2,400 of his fellow Americans had been killed. And between machine gun bullets and that bomb that hit the Pennsylvania, he had come pretty close himself. And now he was watching America respond to what happened and to the tone the president's speech had set.
We had blocks long, people lining up there. The men were going in the service. We were attacked there. The country is united. Everybody wanted to do their part there. So up to that time, the men were the wage earners and the women were staying at home taking care of the family and the kids. Now the men are gone. So what happened? The women stepped in. They started building planes, tanks, guns, ships. They did everything. You've seen the sign, "We can do it" there.
Rosie the Riveter,
they did do it. In fact, I had two sisters that were Rosie Riveters. One worked at Treasure Island, and one worked at the Oakland Naval Supply Depot. They're doing their part. The men were gone. That's how the women that got into the service. So between the No Third attack at Pearl Harbor and the women stepping in and doing, furnished us with what we needed, we won the war.
It would be a long effort, and you'd be a part of a lot of it in the Pacific. What about the aftermath there at Pearl? Did you have to participate in any cleanup or processing?
No, they had enough of those people. All we do is getting that. In fact, it's less than 2 weeks. We're on our way back to San Francisco, getting new guns, getting ready for fighting a war, getting ready for the worst that was going to happen.
How much did it weigh on you that 2,400 Americans had lost their lives and now these ships and planes and so many things were destroyed?
Well, a lot of us are just thinking about get revenge, get back, do for someone to do that to us, or that we want to get even. That was, didn't do our part, do what we can do, get back at them and get back there. You can't get back the lives of the people that died there, but we could try to protect the others that are still with us.
And there were men from your ship who were killed that day?
We had lost 23 men injured. I'm not sure how many of them. You know, all those, some of them that were injured, a lot of them died there. But that particular day and that particular 2 hours, less than 2 hours, we lost 23 men plus the injured.
And, of course, the Arizona lost 1,177 and the Oklahoma lost 429.
Yeah.
And you would find out later that one of those men aboard the Arizona was an old high school rival of yours?
Yes. I played football against him there. He went to different school, and he's one of them that's still listed. He's on the list of the people who died on the Arizona. He's one of them. But I didn't find that out till I went back to Ohio to visit the next year. That's when I found out he's still on. Now, I'm sure I would have played football against him because I played football against him during our school days.
And what was his name?
It was Howard Royer, R-O-Y-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
He lived about 150 yards down the street from me back in a farm in Ohio.
So you had played against him in high school, and you probably would have been playing against him the afternoon of December 7th.
Yes. Of course, we would have won the game anyhow. There's no doubt about it. We would have won. We had the best team. Because I may be prejudiced a little bit.
Maybe a little bit. And how many times do you think you've been back to Pearl Harbor in all these years since?
Well, I was in and out. Well, in the time in the service, so I was many times. Because I was on the battleship Pennsylvania, the same ship I was on it whole World War II. Well, they used us for fire support to the various invasions. So the only thing we did in the Pacific, my ship was the invasion of Attu, Kiska, Macon, Kwajalein, and Uituk, Palau, Saipan, Guam, and Philippines. That's the only ones that invasion my ship was in on.
The only ones, You were in more than you weren't in.
Yeah, well, we were not shooting enemy ships. We were shooting enemy troops in support of our troops that were on land.
Well, and I want to hear some of those stories, as many as you're willing to tell. But I'm just curious, with all the times you've gone back to Pearl, and when you go to the USS Arizona Memorial and you see all those names where your old rival Royer is up there, what do you think about? What goes through your mind when you examine that loss of life and know how close you were to it?
Well, closer. See, when they assigned me to the ship, they could have assigned me to the Arizona. So I think it's my fortune there, luck was with me, or God was with me there, that I could be there instead they're over here. And so I figured there that God had other plans for me. That's why I think he had other plans for me there, to teach the kids, give them a little history lesson there, tell them a story of what really, really happened there, and I'm doing it for them, really. Mm-hmm. Because they can't do it, they're not here to do it. But I can. And I'll do it while I can. And I plan on doing it for years to come, too.
And I know you've been doing it for a long, long time. Is there a part, an element of the Pearl Harbor story that you don't think gets told enough, or that people aren't aware of as they should be?
Well, I learned a lot there that you've got friends. Friends that look out for you, and actually you're looking out for each other. You're looking out for them. They're looking out for you. It's a teamwork. Before, it was just on the football field for that particular day. But here we're fighting a war, fighting for our country, fighting for our lives there. So it's meaningful there that you're looking out for each other. That's what I learned. In fact, when I was growing up, I got in trouble many times there. But I learned by it. I make a mistake here because my dad would beat me for doing something wrong, and sometimes he'd beat me for my brother's doing something wrong or because he feared I'd be the culprit. But so I learned by experience here, learned by mistakes here. Do under others like you'd have others do under you, because it's not a one-man war. It's a group of people,
mm-hmm.
It's a group of services fighting, all working together.
Yeah, 16 million Americans in uniform during World War II. And you mentioned the contributions your sisters made. Out of all 14 of those kids, how many of you were involved in the war effort?
Just my brother, the one that's a year and a half older than me.
What did he do?
He was in the Marines. He spent 21 years in the Marines, and I spent almost 23 years in the Navy. But we were the only ones. But that's really something there, since my father was a draft dodger. Well, you can call me a draft dodger, too, because I didn't want to go in the Army. I joined the Navy.
Mm-hmm. Were you and your brother ever in the same place in the Pacific?
Yes.
Did you get to see each other?
Yeah, a couple of times. In fact, I didn't see him until the Korean War.
Mm.
We met there. I was on an ammunition ship during the Korean War, and he was in the aviation with the Marines there, and he was at one of the air bases in Wonsan in Korea, and we got together there for one short time there. Mm. But then after I came back to the States there, I got to see him, but only one time we met overseas.
You know, and since we're talking about family, another point on Pearl Harbor that I'm interested in. You know, today if something happens and a serviceman's family is concerned, did something happen to my loved one? I mean, there's phones, there's the internet, there's instant communication. In 1941, I'm sure there was at least some period of uncertainty for your family when they heard that Pearl Harbor had been attacked.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were worried about it there, and communications were pretty hard because telephones would all be jammed up, and so you couldn't call. When we finally was able to call, let them know we're all right, it made a difference there, made a relief to them.
Here's another goofy question for you. Since you were supposed to play a football game on December 7th, and I know you were with the Pennsylvania's crew the rest of the war, was there ever another chance to play a game throughout the war?
Well, we'd played sports there. In fact, I was a good bowler, and it wasn't until after the war that I organized bowling leagues for my ship there.
Mm-hmm.
And but I was active in sports there. But during the war, unless you were in port, and it'd be important back in the United States, because we were back and forth at different times there. We could go to games, and things were quite limited.
So in other words, he never did get to play another football game for the Battleship Pennsylvania team. Since Mickey is already planning to renew his driver's license again in 5 years at age 105, I'm hoping they're going to invite him to the opening of the new Aloha Stadium in 2023. Maybe he can perform a ceremonial first snap. I know he can do it because of the 78th Pearl Harbor anniversary commemoration earlier this month. He got down on a three-point stance opposite former Pro Bowl linebacker Donnie Edwards. You can find a photo of that online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And you'll also find video of this moment at the White House 2 years ago.
Throughout the war, one great battle cry could be heard by American friends and foes alike. Remember Pearl Harbor. Have you heard that before a couple of times? Remember Pearl Harbor.
Remember Pearl Harbor as we go to meet the foe. Just remember Pearl Harbor as we dig the Alamo. We shall always remember how they died for liberty. Just remember Pearl Harbor and go on to victory.
Yes. What can I say? Wow, that was good. He's a very shy person, too. And a great football player.
So there's one reason not to miss our next episode. We'll get the rest of Mickey Gannich's Navy story and his perspective on that memorable moment with the president. We're out of time on this episode, but thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, wishing you the merriest of Christmases, encouraging you to say an extra prayer for our men and women in uniform this holiday season, and reminding you once again that freedom is not free.